Good morning. Today's daf from Pesachim Lamed Aleph. We're in the Mishnah Lamed Amud Beis, continuing here in the second parak of Pesachim. We're going to be discussing more regarding chametz and specifically about the Isser of Bal Yerah Bal Yimatzeh. You're not allowed to own chametz on Pesach, so ownership can come in a number of ways. And what we're going to be discussing over the course of this morning is basically the limits of ownership. At what point in time are you, the Jew, going to be considered an owner so that the chametz would become in fact aser because it was owned by a Jew on Pesach? Again, just a quick reminder. Some of the basics that we already discussed and established, the Gemara back on Chav Ches established this, and that is that the Isser of Chametz, according to Rabbi Yehuda, has got three periods of time in which it's Usser. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's Usser pre, during, and post. Before Pesach, during Pesach, and after Pesach. Chametz for Rabbi Yehuda is Usser pre-Pesach, from midday until actual Pesach beginning. So that's a law of the Torah. Then there's a second Isser of Chametz during Pesach, where not only is it Asr, it's Asr through a lot, but it's also going to be an Isser Karis as well. And then post-Pesach, according to Rabbi Yehuda, any Chametz owned during Pesach is going to be Asr after Pesach. And the simple understanding of Rabbi Yehuda is that that is totally irrespective of who owned the Chametz. Shitas Rabbi Yehuda has it that any Chametz that's owned by anybody, Jew or non-Jew, over Pesach is going to be Asr after Pesach. That is the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. And then there's the Shita of Rabbi Shimon, which the Gemara seems to have concluded is in fact the accepted halacha, which is that after Pesach, Chametz is not Asr min HaTorah. Chametz is only Asr during Pesach, but not after Pesach. As far as Rabbi Shimon and before Pesach is concerned, it also sounds like he is not of the opinion that it's an Issa Daraisa. Okay, but according to Rabbi Shimon, Chametz is not Asr min HaTorah after Pesach. However, the Chachamim imposed a kenasa penalty. Any chametz owned by a Jew during Pesach is going to be also after Pesach. It'll be aser be'achila and it'll be aser be'ana as well. Now, why did the Chachamim penalize? Very simple. Because if a Jew owned chametz over Pesach, that means that Jew violated the Isser Bal Yerah Bal Yimatzeh as a kenasa, as a penalty, as a rabbinic penalty. So the Chachamim said that chametz now is going to be aser for everybody after Pesach, both in terms of achila and in terms of ana. So machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, there really is a third shita as well of Rabbi Yossi Aglili. But right now, for our purposes right now, that's just good background information to always remember when discussing chametz, especially chametz shavar alav Pesach. We are now on the Mishnah, and we're going to be discussing the following. Nachri Sheova Yisrael Chimsoh. So let's say a non-Jew lent money to a Jew. And what did the Jew do? Is that the Jew gave the Nachri chametz as collateral. So as security for the loan. So the Jew gave his chametz for the non-Jew to watch. Now, where's the chametz currently right now? Where's the physical chametz being held? So hold that thought because we're going to come back to that a little bit later. But anyway, the chametz is the security for the loan. So achimso achra Pesach mutar ba'ana. So after Pesach has come and gone, so that chametz now is going to be mutar ba'ana. Meaning to say that the way we're going to view that chametz is that chametz was owned by a non-Jew. The non-Jew was holding that chametz as security. We're going to assume right now that there was a default on the loan, and we're going to assume now that the non-Jew actually collected the chametz as payment of his loan. And so, over the interim of Pesach, we're going to view that chametz as if it was owned by the non-Jew during Pesach, and therefore, it's not considered chametz shavar alav Pesach. Meaning, our Mishnah over here is subscribing to the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says that the only chametz that's going to be usher after Pesach is only going to be chametz that was owned by a Jew. Chametz owned by a non-Jew over Pesach is not going to be usher after Pesach. So our Mishnah over here, clearly differentiating whether or not the chametz was owned by a Jew or a non-Jew, is clearly subscribing to the Shita Rabbi Shimon. Now that should not be surprising at all, because if you recall, you go back to the previous Mishnah, chametz shonach yishav alav Pesach mutar ba'na v'shayitzol aser ba'na. So we spent a lot of time in that Mishnah on Chav Ches. But when all said and done, when all the dust cleared, so we concluded that Mishnah is going like Rabbi Shimon as well. So these Mishnayos, even though they are not attributed, so these Mishnayos are going like Rabbi Shimon. Okay. So with that stated, so now the Mishnah over here is going to give us the flip case. Now let's say the Jew lent money to a non-Jew, and the non-Jew gave chametz as security for the loan. So after Pesach comes and goes, so that chametz is now going to be aser ba'ana, meaning that the Jew was holding on to that chametz as security during Pesach. And again, let's assume that there was a default of the loan. I say default, by the way, or right, the, whatever. We don't have to use a strong language. It just simply means that the non-Jew said to the Jew, you know what? Keep the chametz, meaning that'll satisfy the obligation. So anyway, the chametz was earmarked as a security. So this is now going to be considered chametz shavar lava pesach, meaning that the way now the Mishnah says we're viewing the chametz as if the chametz was owned by the Jew over pesach, even though while the Jew was holding it, it was only as a security. But nevertheless, what we're going to say is that retroactively, it was his; it belonged to the Jew. And therefore, it's chametz shavar lava pesach, and therefore it's going to be asur ba'ana. Okay, good. Again, our Mishnah subscribes to the Shita Rebbe Shimon. That is our Mishnah. Our Mishnah does not give us a lot of details. And over the course of the Gemara's discussion, which is going to take up most of today's daf, so what we're going to do is we're going to invest ourselves in two basic issues. Really, one basic issue. But in doing so, we're really going to clarify the circumstances of the Mishnah and gain a much better understanding of what exactly happened with this chametz security that the Mishnah over here is describing. But the basic issue that we're going to be dealing with is basically how to look at a security. Now, our Mishnah seems to be giving us a really clear picture of how to look at a security, and that is that the lender, when holding onto a security, so the lender has a quasi-ownership status of that security. That's pretty clear in the Mishnah. The Mishnah said that when the non-Jew is holding the chametz as a security for the loan, so that is not subject to the Isser of Bali Rabbi Amatze, or I'll say it better, it's not subject to the Isser of Chametz Shavar Lava Pesach, because that's considered chametz of a non-Jew. And then conversely, if a Jew was holding a chametz as security for a loan, so the Mishnah says that that is considered chametz owned by a Jew over Pesach, and therefore subject to Chametz Shavar Lava Pesach. So from our Mishnah, certainly the sense that we get is that a security being held by the lender, so the lender now has a quasi-ownership status of it. Enough of an ownership status, so it would be considered, if that lender was a Jew, enough of a status so that the chametz would be considered chametz shavar lava pesach. And so over the course of today's daf, it's really one really big issue, and that is how to view a security and how to view the lender's relationship to a security. So Itmar, so we start off with the following. Bal chov, that when it comes to a lender, Abai Amar Lamafrei Ugova, Rava Amar Mikanu Lahaba Ugova, a lender and his relationship to a security. So Abai says it goes back retroactive, Lamafrei Ugova, meaning that in the event that the borrower defaults on the loan, and now the lender gets to keep that security, so Abai says, yes, he gets to keep that security. And not only that, he's considered the de facto owner of that security from the time that he was given the security. And Rava says no. Rava Amar Mikanu Lava Ugova. Rava says no. That security only becomes his only at the point of default, but it does not go back retroactively any time earlier. Good. So we have over here a basic machlokas between Abai and Rava, examining, looking at the relationship of a lender and his security that he's holding in the event of a default of the loan. Now, if we could just simply conceptualize, analyze the machlokas as presented to us. And I'm offering just really a simple way to see the two sides of Abai and Rava. So Abai says, Lamafreu Gove. So what basically Abai is saying is as follows. When the borrower gives the lender the security to hold on to, so effectively what the borrower is saying to the lender is, you know what? Here. Meaning, here's payment. Now, obviously, it's a security. Meaning, the borrower's not saying to the lender, right, that I'm giving it to you right now. Obviously, if that were the case, so what would the point of the borrower borrowing the money altogether? Meaning the borrower wants right now cash, he wants liquidity. But according to Abaye, basically what we're looking at is that when the security is given over to the lender at the beginning of the loan, at the origination, so at that point in time, what we're effectively saying is a transaction has occurred. So that later on, when in fact the borrower defaults, so now we're going to say that good. Now we're going to look at the security as owned by the lender and it retroactive to the time of the origination when he actually received the security. Now, even according to Abaye, now being that it was a security, we all understood it to be a security, certainly the borrower has the right to buy it back, meaning that he is a borrower, meaning that he has an obligation and he's going to pay back, or he wants to pay back his obligation. Anytime he has the ability to pay back his debt, he certainly can buy back the item. But the way Abai views it is that when the security is given, the transaction basically occurred at that point in time. And he has an option to buy it back when he in fact pays back the loan. And according to Rava says no. Mikanu la'aba. Rava basically looks at this giving of a security as no kind of transaction. Basically, what the borrower is doing to the lender is he's instilling confidence in the lender. He's saying, look, I'm going to pay you back, and you hold on to this item of mine until I pay you back. But the way Rava looks at it is that this is not any kind of transaction. This is just simply the borrower giving confidence, instilling confidence in the lender, and basically pacifying the lender, I'm going to pay you back. And this is going to be held against me, so that it'll encourage me, it'll motivate me to pay you back. But no transaction has occurred. Now, if in the event, at a later point in time, the borrower does in fact default, so then obviously the security is going to be able to be held by the lender. But according to Rava, this is where the transaction occurs. The transaction didn't occur at the inception, at the origination. This is where the transaction occurs. Good. So that's just a nice, easy way to look at this machlokus between Abai and Rava. In the event that the borrower defaults on the loan, and now the lender gets to hold on to the security, is that holding on to the security retroactive to the time it was given to him, that she's a sabaye? Or, no, it's only now, at the time of the default, now going to be under the ownership of the lender. Now, hopefully what you're wondering right now is, doesn't our Mishnah speak directly to this issue? And the answer is, yes, it does. And we're going to have to be a little bit patient, because it's going to take the Gemara a while to come back full circle to our Mishnah and introduce our Mishnah into this discussion. But in the meantime, however, let's continue. So, Kol Heicham. So the Gemara says as follows. Look, as far as now the borrower's relationship to the security, so the Gemara says we all are on the same page. Kol Heicha de'aktish lov v'zavin lov v'kulam lo pligi, da'asi mave v'taref, asi mave u'parik. So that, look, if the borrower were to sell the security, meaning during the loan, while the lender is holding on to the security, so if the borrower tries to do any kind of transaction with that security, he either sells it or he's makdish it, so then everyone's in agreement that the borrower has no right to do so. Now, Rashi over here writes that in order for you to be makdish any of your possessions to the Beis HaMikdash, you need two things, says Rashi. Number one, you need ownership. Number two, you need control. Now, when the borrower gave over the security to the lender, we'll still call the borrower an owner as long as the loan is in effect. We'll still call the borrower the owner, right? But at the same time, however, he has no control over the item. The item is earmarked as security for the loan. So he may be the owner, but he's not the controller of that item. And so to be makdish anything, you have to have ownership and you have to have control. Right, and Rashi cites that it's based on a drasha in Pesukim. Anyway, good. And under those circumstances, so let's say the borrower either was makdish the item or he sold the item. So the malva just simply goes to the buyer. And if it's a sale, the malva just simply says he had no right to sell that. I'll take that. Thank you very much. I had a lien on that item. That item was earmarked for the loan. Or alternatively, if the borrower is makdish the item, so the lender goes to Hekdesh and says, thank you very much, I'll take it. Now, when it comes to taking it from Hekdesh, so over here, as the Gemara is about to share with us, so it's, even though the lender is fully within his right to just simply take it back from Hekdesh, the borrower had no right to be makdish the item. The item was currently being held as security against the loan. So, and really, it's more the lender's than it is the borrower's. So, but the lender just simply can't take it back from Hekdesh. The lender, what the lender's going to do is he's going to give a token payment to Hekdesh in order to collect it. Now, why should that be? So we're going to see together in the Gemara in just a moment, and Rashi will say, but I'm paraphrasing right now. It's just simply inappropriate. Inappropriate for you to go to Hekdesh and take something from Hekdesh, even though it's rightfully yours, even though the Lova had no business dedicating it to Hekdesh, but still, it's just so inappropriate to go and take something from Hekdesh. So you give a token amount to Hekdesh in order to recoup it. Okay, that's what we're going to learn together right now. So, lo pligi da'asi malva v'tarfa asi malva uparik. Ditnan. As we are now on the top of Laman Aleph, Amin Aleph, we learned in the Mishnah Erchin, Mosiv o dinar upodes and achasim ha'ilo. So what the malva is going to do is he's going to give a dinar. It's a token amount in order to, now the word over here used in the Mishnah is to redeem. It's not really a redemption. It didn't really belong to Hekdesh. The Lova had no right to be Makdish it. But, again, it's almost like it's an appearance issue. The Chachamim did not want people to just simply walk away from Hekdesh, taking something from Hekdesh, or at least having the appearance of having taken something from Hekdesh, so therefore he has to give a token amount. Good. So the Gemara says, here's where we all have full clarity. At the during the time of the loan, while the security is a security, the borrower cannot sell the item, the borrower cannot be makdish the item, that part's clear. Rav and Abaye are not under dispute under that issue. Ki pliki dezavin malva mekadosh malva. What is open for a debate between Abaye and Rava is the lender's relationship to the security. Can he sell the item? Can he be makdish the item? Abaye amar lamafrei hu gove, kevin demachos zman velo pare, igla milsa lamafrei demikar b'shusei havekai, v'shaper akdish v'shaper zavin. So Abaye will tell you, look, obviously all this will be resting on the default, meaning well, there is no discussion if there was not a default of the loan. But if, in fact, there ends up becoming a default of the loan, the borrower is unable to pay, it's formally, legally registered as a default. So under those circumstances, the buyer will tell you, good. So you know what that means? It means that the lender is the owner of that item. Not now, but retroactive to the origination. That's Abaye's position. So that means that according to Abaye, if the lender wanted to either sell or be makdish the item during the loan, so he had the right to do so because retroactively it's proven to be his. Now, it's going to get a little bit complicated. Obviously, if the borrower didn't default on the loan, and now, obviously, because the borrower, even according to Abaye, the borrower certainly has the right to buy back the item, meaning that's why it's a security. But And that part does get more complicated, but assuming that there will be a default of the loan, and there is in fact a default of the loan, so Abaye says, good, it goes retroactive to the time of the origination of the loan, when the security was given over. And Rava Amar Mikanu Labahu Gover, and Rava says, no. The security is only assumed ownership by the lender, only at the point of default, only from that point going forward, not retroactive. So came the Ilo Havale Zuzavim Misagle Bezuze, Ishtakich the Ashakakani. And Rava will tell you, look, during the loan, the borrower at any point in time can just simply pay back the loan and reclaim his security. So at the point of default, it's only then that he concedes the security over to the lender, but not any point earlier. Good. Machlokes between Abaye and Rava, how to look at a security where there is a default of the loan. Is the security owned by the lender retroactive, that's Abaye, or only Mikanu Laba? And the only thing that is open for discussion is the lender's relationship to the security. Certainly we have full clarity about what the borrower's relationship of the security is during the loan. Okay, now, Umi Amar Rava Hachi. So the Gemara says, now, under these circumstances, is Rava really strongly feeling his position? And does he really subscribe to that? Consider the following. Now, if it happens to be that you're in real estate, so you're going to love these upcoming Gemaras, as these Gemaras are talking about simple real estate deals with liens, with mortgages, and you're going to love it. Now, if you're not in real estate, so like me, for example, so just let's all follow along. It's going to get a little bit complicated, but all this is going to make a singular point in that it sounds like from Rava that Rava does in fact subscribe to the idea that the security goes back retroactive. How do I see that? In the following circumstance. So Reuven sells a property to Shimon, and Reuven sells it with Achrayos. Reuven says to Shimon, look, I'm going to sell you the property, and I'm going to guarantee the property. In the event that any of my creditors come to you and with a lien on that property and take that property away from you. In other words, they're exercising their lien, and of course they have every right to do so. So what Reuven says to Shimon is, I'm going to pay you back the value of the property. So he puts a guarantee on the sale. So, v'zakvan alav b'milva. Now, it also happens to be that Shimon, at the time where he's purchasing the property, so Shimon is cash poor. He doesn't have any money to pay for the property. So Shimon says to Reuven, hey, do me a favor. Would you mind if I borrowed the money from you in order to pay for the property? And Reuven says, fine, no problem at all. Good. So this now makes for a complex scenario in that looking at the relationship between Reuven and Shimon, so Reuven now is guaranteeing the property. At the same time, Shimon now is a borrower to Reuven. Reuven now also is a creditor, is a lender to Shimon. Okay, so admittedly now it gets a little bit complicated. It's going to get even a little bit more complicated. Umeis Reuven. Now, what happens over here is that this property, which is now currently owned by Shimon, although Shimon does owe for the property, so Reuven dies. Now here comes along creditors of Reuven, kind of like Reuven predicted was going to happen, right? Reuven knew that he had creditors. So anyway, so along comes the creditors of Reuven, and they go to Shimon and they say, look, we're going to exercise our lien. We're going to take the property. And Shimon says, wait one second. Oh, hold it. Right? Obviously, you're exercising a lien because you're owed money. So here's what I'll do. I'll pay you back the money that's owed to you. I really like this property. I want to hold on to this property, so I'm going to pay it back to you. Okay, so at this point in time now, so Shimon has satisfied the creditors of Reuven, Alav Hashalom, and now Shimon is going to hold on to the property, correct? So the Gemara says, no, not correct. Dina hu da'aseh b'nei Reuven v'amar leh l'Shimon. So now, here comes the Yesomim, right, the estate, and the estate goes over to Shimon and says the following to Shimon. Anan metalta l'shavak avuch gaban, u'metalta l'yasme l'bachov l'mishtabde. So the estate goes over to Shimon, and the kids say to Shimon, look, as far as the relationship between us and that property, let's consider the following. Now, before we let me just give a little bit of background over here so that this we can understand this really well. And that is that when we're looking at an estate, meaning the kids, when we're looking at the estate, what is their obligation regarding all payables and all receivables of their father? So let's start off with receivables. Okay, so any money that comes into the estate, so the kids have as much of a right to collect as a father, meaning all receivables are going to be inherited by the kids, and the kids can go ahead and collect any money due to the father. Good. That's on the receivable side. What about the payable side? So here, the Chachamim came in and they instituted the following for the Yisomim, for the estate. And that is that if the kids inherited any properties of the father, so the mortgage that was on the property remains on the property. Any creditor who had a mortgage on the property, who had a lien on the property, can come along and take the property and exercise the lien on the property, even though the property was transferred from Reuven to Shimon. But even though there was a change of ownership of the property, but the lien remains the same. That's when it comes to property. What about if it were to come to money? So monies that the father owed to anybody, that is not inherited by the kids. The kids are me'ikar hadin, according to the strict letter of the law, not obligated to pay any obligations that the father had that was not mortgaged against the property. Okay, that's the Chachamim's protection of the Yisomim. So again, when it comes to Yisomim, when it comes to the estate, the kids do not have to, any properties that they inherited, the lien still attached to the property, any assets that the father owed to other people, but it was not, there was no lien attached to property, so the kids themselves do not have an obligation to pay. Now, the Gemaras elsewhere discuss that it would be in the best interest of the estate, if they're able to do so, to pay off all the debts of their father. Because obviously, if now the debts are not going to be paid and the kids don't pay the debts, so that'll present a bad reputation, a bad name for the family. So there is that discussion to be had, but for our purposes right now, we're not gonna focus on that. What we're focusing on is the following. So we have now the kids who have the following claim and taina against Shimon. And they say to Shimon the following. You know, let's go over what happened. So yeah, dad sold you a property, and remember you didn't have the money to pay, and remember now that you borrow the money, so you owe the money. Now the creditors came along and tried to take the property away from you. But the truth of the matter is the kids said to Shimon, you owed our father the money for the property. Fine. So the kids say to Shimon, do you know that if you would have paid us that money, we would in turn not have to pay the creditors that money? Because again, that's not property of the estate. That's just simply an asset of the estate, and the kids do not have to pay that obligation. So the kids, when I say the kids, by the way, obviously we could be talking about adults over here, but the kids are now saying to Shimon, you know, Shimon, instead of paying the creditors that money, if you would have paid us that money, you owe the money anyway. If you would have paid us that money, we would have kept that money. And instead now you pay the creditors that money? That's not right. And so what the kids now are going to say to the to Shimon is that you still owe us the either the property or the money. Okay. So this is now the argument that's made by the estate over to Shimon, who tried to pay off the creditors. So Ve'amar Rava. Okay, so now this puts Shimon in a really bad position. So Rava says, fine, you're right, it does put Shimon in a bad position, but Rava says, but here's a solution. And it's here where we're going to really put all of our focus on in terms of understanding how this position of Rava that he's about to present us is going to be difficult based on what we learned earlier. The Amar Rava Yipikech Shimon, if Shimon is smart, Magbele Aro. So what he's going to do is as follows. He's going to say to the estate, oh, you know what? Here's what we'll do. I did owe your father money, right? Remember, Shimon borrowed money in order to buy the property. Shimon borrowed money from Reuven. Shimon was a borrower to Reuven. So now Shimon's going to go over to the estate and Shimon's going to say to the estate, you know what? I owed your father money, but here's what I'll do. I'll give you the property in satisfaction of the loan. What is the property? Obviously the property is security against the loan. Now, here's what now Shimon could do. V'hadar gabilei minayhu. Shimon now can go ahead and collect that property back to him. Why? Because remember that when Reuven sold the property to Shimon, Reuven sold the property to Shimon with a guarantee. So Reuven says to Shimon, you know, if any one of the creditors comes along and takes that property from you, so I'm going to make good on it. So that's what I said. The complexity of this situation is such where, on one hand, Shimon is a borrower of Reuven. On the other hand, Reuven also is a borrower to Shimon in that he put a guarantee in the sale of the property. So when Shimon gives the property back to the kids, now Shimon says, good. So now you have the property. Oh, you know what? So funny, when your father sold me the property, he promised me that, right, it was in the contract. He promised me that if anyone comes along and takes the property away from me, so he would make good on that. So now I'm just going to take the property as a satisfaction of that guarantee. The Amar of Nachman and the Gemara just simply points out, Yisom Shigavu Karka Bechovas Aviyam. So if the kids were to collect any obligations, any outstanding obligations, in the form of a property, so Baal Chov Chosev Agovim Mehem. So any creditors. Now remember, the creditors cannot come and take any of the metalton and any of the movables from the estate. But if the kids have a property, so then what the creditors can do is they can take that property, meaning that the lien is still within that property and any creditor can come and take the property. Who happens to also be a creditor to the estate? So oddly enough, Shimon also is a creditor to the estate because again, when Reuven sold the property over to Shimon, so Reuven sold it to him with Achrayos, which means now that Shimon also is a creditor. So once the kids got now the property, so now Shimon has the right, has the entitlement to take that property back. Good. This is all as per Rava's solution to how Shimon can keep the property. Now, so the Gemara says, now let's take a look at this property vis-a-vis as a security. Now, all this entire deal, this entire episode, makes a lot of sense if, in fact, the way we're going to be viewing the estate's the estate's receiving of the property as a not only that they are currently acquiring the property, but rather goes back retroactively. When Shimon goes and gives the property over to the kids, it's not that the kids acquire the property here and now, but it goes back retroactively to where their father was the one who basically collected the property. And that this is really considered a property that goes back to the father. Then all this makes sense. However, i amart mikan ulabau gove. But if you're telling me that when the kids go ahead and collect the property, we're looking at this as a new transaction, so am I chosev gove asamehen? Why can any creditor come and take that property? Have a command to zaven yasme nachse deme dami ve'ilukane yasme nachse mikam shtabel abal chov. Look, from here going forward, If the estate, if the children were to make any new purchase on a property, are creditors entitled to come along and collect that property on a loan that was owed by the father? The answer clearly is no. Meaning that the only thing that the creditors have a right to is an exercise of lien on a property that was given over as part of the Yerusha. That's what they have a lien in. They certainly do not have a lien in any new properties that come into the estate. So when Shimon gave over the property to the estate, to the kids, so clearly the way Rav is viewing it is that this is lima freya, this is retroactive. This goes back to the time where basically dad was the one who guaranteed the property over to the to Shimon. And that's why Shimon now can go ahead and collect from that property. But if the way we're viewing it is mikano lahava, so this is just simply a new transaction that's done by the children, which means that no creditors have a right to that estate. What comes out from all this is that the way Rava has formulated the solution for Shimon so that he's able to reclaim that property seems to be all predicated on lima freya and not mikano lahava. And this obviously is difficult because Rava's entire assertion from the beginning is that the way we view securities is that in the event of a default, it's only acquired from this point going forward and not retroactively. In this episode over here, it sounds like Rava is arguing just the opposite, that it's going back retroactively. That's the only thing that gave Shimon the right to go ahead and to retrieve that property for himself, as Shimon himself is a creditor to that property, but he can only collect from that if the property is viewed not as a new acquisition by the children, but rather something that retroactively goes back to the time, to the origination, when the father was alive. Okay, so this is all a problem. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you know what? Here's what we can do. We can keep Rava within his position of Mikano Laba, and we could still understand Rava's advice in this case over here. Shani Yalsam Damar Lu Ki Echad Mishtab Lo Avuchon Mishtaba Nanam Laba Chov Da Avuchon. So look, I had a shibud to your father, and also I had a shibud to the creditors of your father. Meaning over here, what we're going to go over is the transitive property of loans, right? A owes B, B owes C. So what C can go do is to go back to A and say, hi, you don't know me, but you owe me, right? This is the transitive properties of loans, and the Gemara says, Mid Rabbi Nasan, Detanya Rabbi Nasan, Omer Minayin Lanosha Bechaver, Amana Bechaver Bechaver, Shemotzim Izem Nosan Lazen. So how do I know that A can go over to C and A could say, look, right? I forgot which way I went, but it doesn't matter. In other words, A can go over to C and say, look, right? You owed B, B owed me, so I'm going directly to you. And how do I know that that's perfectly legitimate? So Tamalam Benosan Lasher Hashem Lo. It's based on a drasha. We're not going to go through the drasha right now, but anyway, so the transitive property of loans. And so, even if we're saying mikan ulahaba, what Shimon is telling the children is the following: look, your father owed me. In other words, he sold me the property, and he sold it to me through a with a guarantee. So your father owed me. It's true, I owed him, but he also owed me. Now I know we're describing over here a loop, but what we're arguing is as follows: even if we're viewing the default of the loan and the returning of the security, even if we view that as a new transaction, which Rava does view as a new transaction, what Shimon are telling the estate is the following. Look, on one hand, it's true, I owed your father, but at the very same time, your father owed me. So through this transitive property, I know over here it's not A, B, and C. And that's why I'm totally cognizant of the fact that this gets a little bit more complicated. But still, what Shimon is saying to the kids is that that I owed your father, but at the same time, your father owed me as well. So through this transitive property, I'm now in turn able to go ahead and collect this property. And through this transitive property of loan collection. Good. So what comes out from all this is that we are the case is exactly as we laid out. The advice of Rava is sound advice in terms of how Shimon can go ahead and get the property back. And we have not budged from Rava's original position. Rava says that upon the default of a loan, it's then and only then where the creditor becomes the owner of that security. Good. Tanan. With that stated, we continue in the Gemara. And now, finally, right, a half an hour later, more, so we are now going full circle, we go back to our Mishnah, and that is Nachash Ilvei, Yisrael, Achem So. So when the non-Jew lends money to the Jew, Achra Pesach Mutabana, and Pesach comes and goes, and obviously there's a default of the loan, and now the Chametz is being held by the non-Jew, so it's Mutabana, the Chametz is Mutabana. So for Abaye, perfect. Meaning this is exactly what Abaye has been saying. That upon the default of the loan, so the security that was being held by the lender is in fact now owned by the lender. Not now, but retroactive. This chametz was always owned by the non-Jew. It's perfect. But the Gemara says for Rava, this is really difficult. Because upon the default of the loan, yes, it's owned by the creditor, but only from this point going forward. That means that historically, over Pesach, so this was the chametz owned by a Jew. This should be subject to this should be subject to chametz shavar lav Pesach. So hachabam ma'iskin and kisharino etzlo. So the Gemara says, okay. So now the Gemara is going to fill in the detail which I have been ambiguous about since the beginning, but the Gemara now is going to fill in the detail. And that is, who was holding the security? Now, I'm sure at certain points in time, I wasn't clear about who was holding the security, and maybe I even gave mixed messages, but the Gemara over here now is going to clarify this detail. And that is, who's holding the security? So the Gemara says that in our mission over here, it was the lender holding the security. Now, why does that make that different? So the Gemara is assuming right now that the machlokes between Abai and Rava is only when the security is being earmarked, but the lender is not actually physically holding it. But if the security moves into the possession of the lender, meaning into the property of the lender, so even Rava will concede that that makes the lender more of an owner of the item. And our Mishnah, meaning Rava, will say that I'm debating Abaye in a scenario where the security did not move. The security was just simply identified. It was earmarked. But if the security actually was moved over to the property of the lender, fine. Then I totally agree. Then it's the lender's. And that's our Mishnah. So Lema Ketanai, the Gemara would like to suggest, this is Machlokas Tanai. The Braisa brings down, Yisrael Sheovel Anachri Chimso Lachar Pesach Eino Over. So a Jew lending money to a non-Jew, and the Jew's holding Chametz of the non-Jew as security, so Eino Over is not going to be in violation of Chamisha Avar Lava Pesach, and Mishum Rabbi Meir Omer Over, and Rabbi Meir, they say in the name of Rabbi Meir that, no, it is Chamisha Avar Lava Pesach, my love. So the Gemara says that this machlokis Tanayim, Tanakama, and Rabbi Meir is really just a reflection of the machlokis between Abai and Rava, right? And we all know, right? We've gone through enough Gemara to know Amorim don't like that. They don't like that that their position turns out to be a machlokis of Tanayim, especially if you're the one who's going to be aligned with the Das Yachid, with the Shitas Yachid. So the Tizbar, the Gemara says, and anyway, it doesn't make sense that that's the correct pshat in the Braisa. Because Ema Sefer, go on to the next part of the Braisa, which is, Aval Nachri Shilva Yisrael, Achem Sola, Achra Pesach, Dibre Alkol Over. When I have a non-Jew lending to a Jew, and the non-Jew is holding the Jew's chametz as security, so Dibre Alkol Over, everyone's of the position, that is now going to be considered chametz of a Jew, and therefore going to be in violation of Chamisha Avar Lava Pesach. Now, vaha ibchami baile, lamanda amar hasam eino over, hacha over, lamanda amar hasam over, hacha eino over. Now, the Gemara says, you know, that seems to be a little bit challenging. Meaning, shouldn't we assume that whatever you held in the first position, so it should be the opposite in this position? And meanwhile, the end of the Braisa says, no. So the Gemara says, hala hacha b'maiskinam, what are we dealing with over here? So as we are now on the top of Laman Aleph Amud Beis, so halcha b'maiskina kigon shehir inu etzlo. We're talking about where the chametz was actually deposited into the creditor's hands. Again, like we described moments earlier, the kamitzel gave it to Rabbi Yitzchak, and they're arguing within the sheet of Rabbi Yitzchak. De amar Rabbi Yitzchak minayin labachov shekona mashkon. So over here, when the lender is holding the collateral, what is the lender's relationship to the collateral that he's holding? So this is the halacha of Rabbi Yitzchak, minan labachov shekona mashkon shenemar ulechati etzdaka. So the pasuk in Parshas Kiseitzei, when describing the lender holding on to collateral of the borrower, and let's say it's a pair of pajamas and or it's a blanket, and the borrower who's so poor needs it at night in order to keep himself warm. So the Torah describes that what you're going to do is you're going to give it to the borrower every night so he can sleep with it, so he can sleep comfortably. Here literally, not figuratively. So he can sleep comfortably. And l'chati yatzdaka. And you know what? That's really nice on your part. Meaning it's really, what's the impression you get from the Torah? It's really yours, but good. But it'd be really nice if you did that. L'chati yatzdaka. Imenu kar mashkan tzdaka minayin. Now, if you didn't acquire the item, why is the Torah describing that tzedaka? Tzedaka is what you give of yours. So mikan la balchov she kona mashkan. So Rabbi Yitzchak says that a balchov is going to be kona mashkan. Good, that's the halacha of Rabbi Yitzchak. Now Tanakama sefer hani mili Yisrael mi Yisrael. So now the Tanakama of the brisa that we just learned on the bottom of the previous amud. So he'll say, look, I subscribe to Rabbi Yitzchak, but that is if the two parties in this transaction are Jew and Jew. So who dekrina beiv lachati yatzdaka? That's where we apply the drasha. But if a Jew is borrowing money from a non-Jew, so lo kani. So there's not going to be any acquisition. Meaning that when the non-Jew is holding the security of a Jew, so there we're not going to say that he acquired. Rameir safar kavachomer. So and Rameir will tell you, what are you talking about? Yisrael kani. Yisrael mi nachri lo kol shekain. Sorry. I said it incorrectly. It was the Jew is lending money to a non-Jew, and the Jew is now the one holding the security, holding the collateral. So the Tanakhama will tell you that there's no transaction. And what Reb Meir will tell you is no, he does acquire the item. And Reb Meir bases it on a kavachomer. Look, if a Jewish lender acquires an item from a Jewish borrower when he's holding the collateral, certainly that would be true if a Jewish lender were to be taking an item from a non-Jew. The Gemara says it seems to be a strong logical argument. Now the Gemara says, now let's say the non-Jew is a lender, and now the non-Jew holds collateral of the Jew. In this case, the collateral is chametz. So there, kuliam, according to everyone, the divrei hakol over. So everyone's of the position that chametz still is owned by the Jew. Why? Because there's certainly not going to be any kinyan. That collateral is still owned by the Jew. Now, it's funny. The argument the Gemara is making is that basically, when the Jew is a lender, I'm sorry, when the non-Jew is a lender and the Jew is a borrower, and the Jew is now handing over collateral, so basically the Gemara is assuming that the way that serves the most advantage, the most advantageous point to the Jew, which would mean that the collateral is not owned by the non-Jew. Obviously, it's their security for the loan, but it's not owned by the non-Jew. So that's going to be the way we're going to view it. Fine. It's funny because over here, it comes out now, generally speaking, of course, that's going to help the borrower, the Jewish borrower. But in this particular case, it's going to hurt him because now it turns out that the chametz is owned by the Jew and subject to Chamish Avra Lava Pesach. Anyway. Good. So the Gemara says so that debate in the Braisa is not reflective of Abai and Rava. Because as we already established, the machlokes between Abai and Rava is only going to be where the security was not handed over from the borrower to the lender. So then Abai and Rava have this debate. But if the security is handed over to the lender, so then even Rava will tell you that it goes back retroactively. Tanan, the Gemara says, okay, can we go back to our Mishnah? If a non-Jew lends money to a Jew, and the Jew is now going to be securing the loan with chametz, so after Pesach it's mutar b'ana. Now nehi nami dirino eto amar nachri yisrael lo kani. So the Gemara says, now here's the problem. You remember what we just got done establishing, that when a non-Jewish lender is holding a security of the Jew, so that is not going to be considered a kinyan. There everyone agrees we don't subscribe to the rule of Rabbi Yitzchak of Lachati Yatzdaka. So the Gemara says, so even if that were the case, so we would not be viewing the non-Jewish lender as the owner of the collateral, which means that the collateral is still owned by the Jew, and therefore should be subject to Chamish Arva Lava Pesach. It should be Asa Bachila, it should be Asa Bahana. And meanwhile, our Mishnah taught us that it's not subject to Chamish Arva Lava Pesach. So Lokasha Adamar Le Me'achshav, Adlamar Le Me'achshav. So the Gemara now is going to fill in another detail in the Mishnah. And that is that in the Mishnah scenario, where the non-Jew is a lender, the Jew is a borrower, the Jew handed over Chametz collateral to secure the loan. So not only did he hand it over to the non-Jew, but he also said at the time that he handed over, I'm giving you this chametz me'achshav. So now, this is really a transaction. Now, since we're still calling it collateral, you have the option to buy it back, but you handed it over to the non-Jewish lender. You said me'achshav. Everyone's in agreement now that after Pesach and after the default of the loan, everyone's going to say that's going to go retroactive to the time of the origination, which means that this was chametz that was owned by a non-Jew. And this idea that making the statement of me'achshav is significant, the Gemara says, we have a b'raisa, detanya, we learned in a b'raisa. Nach yishirin pas parani, etzel yisrael, ain't over. V'im amar lo, higiaticha over. If I have a non-Jew that hands over paspurani, right, oven-baked bread, it's significant bread, and he hands it over, ain't over, he's not in violation. However, if he says higiticha, that I'm giving it to you, so then you're going to be in violation. So Maishna Reisha, Maishna Sefer, what's the difference? So the Gemara says, yeah, because in the when you said higiaticha, that's just simply another way of saying me'achshav. You're handing over the security, you're saying. So number one, you're handing it over. Number two, you're saying me'achshav. So under those circumstances, we view it as a transaction. And therefore, if this was a non-Jew handing it over to the Jew, saying me'achshav, so under those circumstances, it is now property of the Jew, and it's chametz, and it was owned by the Jew over Pesach. You're over in chametz avalav Pesach. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan. One more brisa before we get to the next Mishnah. Chanusha Yisrael. Umal'ei she'Yisrael, upalei nachrim nechnasim l'sham. Okay, so you have a store owned by a Jew. The inventory, all owned by the Jew. The workers are non-Jews. So now chametz she'nimtza sham. Now, it turns out that chametz was found over there. So, is this chametz belong to the Jew? Meaning, what do we assume? That this was part of the inventory, which means that that's chametz owned by a Jew, therefore subject to chametz shavar lav Pesach, or random chametz that's found in the warehouse, is it one of the non-Jewish workers' chametz? So, the shenim sasham, achra Pesach, aser ba'hanav v'in tzarech lomar ba'achila. We assume that that's part of the inventory, meaning that this was chametz owned by a Jew over Pesach, and therefore subject to chametz shavar lav Pesach. Chanesh onachrei, amale shonachrei. Let's just invert the case. The store is owned by a non-Jew. The inventory is owned by the non-Jew. Pola Yisrael nechnasim v'yotzim l'sham. And you have Jewish workers going in there. Chametz shenitz l'sham achrei Pesach. Any chametz that's found after Pesach, muter b'hana. Muter b'achila v'ein tzarech lomar b'hana. So at that point in time, we're going to assume that whatever chametz is found over there was part of the inventory, which is owned by the non-Jew, and therefore not going to be subject to chametz shavar lav Pesach. And again, what's obviously very clear is that this brisa also subscribes to the shita of Rabbi Shimon. Okay. Let us begin and conclude the next section of Mishnah Gemara, so that tomorrow we will be starting at a great spot. Chametz shenafal alav mapala. So let's say chametz was buried under rubble. So before Pesach comes around, so it happens to be that the house caved in, and now chametz is buried underneath. So harihu chemivuar. So the Mishnah says, okay, so that's bir chametz. You successfully destroyed your chametz. Obviously, you'd prefer the house didn't come in, but now that the chametz is buried underneath this rubble, so you don't have to go digging. And Rav Shimon Gamliel amar kol she'ena kelav yachol lecha pesach harav. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says, well, that's as long as the dog will not be digging it up. Now, Amar of Chista v'tzorch shivata b'libo. So a couple of points the Gemara makes over here in the scenario of the Mishnah. One is the halach of Rav Chista, you have to do bittul. Why do you have to do bittul? Rashi over here explains, because what may end up happening is that somebody may dig it up during Pesach, and you're going to be in violation of Bayir Rabbi Yamatzeh. Meaning that it's an interesting way to look at it from Rav Chista's standpoint, is that the only reason why you're detached from the chametz is because of your inaccessibility to the chametz. But once there is accessibility to the chametz, so then it de facto becomes yours again. Okay, I said it really simply, and I really oversimplified it. It really requires more analysis in terms of how exactly that worked. Anyway, Back to the Gemara. Amar lei, no, I skipped. Tana. Kamach visas kalev shlosha tfachim. Now Shimon Gamliel says, yeah, you know what? It's good and buried, provided a dog can't get to it. So the Gemara says, can we give like a little more quantifiable measurement over here? So the Gemara says, yeah, 3 tfachim deep. So there has to be 3 tfachim of rubble on top of it in order to make this no longer accessible, neither to you nor to your dog. Okay, I know it's going to be almost impossible to know exactly how much rubble's on top of it, but okay. But anyway, but we gave a quantifiable measure. So Amalei Rav Acha Bar Rav Yosef Rav Ashi Adam Rav Shmuel. Now the Gemara says, okay, let's reflect on a halacha of Shmuel, which is the following: Safim Ein Lam Shmira Ella Bekarka. You know, somebody entrusts you to watch money. So how do you responsibly watch that money? What are you supposed to do? So if you have a safety deposit box, so good. If you have a safe in your house, good. Okay, we're going back to a time where none of those were real options. So what'd you do back in the good old days? So you buried it in the ground. So me being a shosh tefachim olo. Well, look, in terms of our halachas of chametz on Pesach, we just made it really clear that in order for the chametz to be detached from you, it has to be buried 3 tefachim underground. Are we going to say the same thing over here regarding proper security of an item that you were entrusted to watch? So does it have to be buried 3 tefachim underground? So amalei hacham ishum reicha beina shosh tefachim. So the Gemara says these two halachas are not to be compared because there are different contexts. When it comes to the chametz buried under the ground, so why 3 tefachim deep? Because if it's anything less than 3 tefachim deep, the dog is going to sniff it out. Once the dog is able to sniff it out, he's going to dig it out. And then now you're going to have access to your chametz. Hasam over there, when it comes to a shomer watching somebody else's money, mishum ichsuye me'ene hu, v'lo bai shlosha. So over there, all you want to just simply do is put it out of sight. That's all you need to do to responsibly watch the money. Just make sure that when somebody walks into your house, he doesn't see the money. So it doesn't have to be buried 3 tefachim underground. Vikama, okay, so not 3 tefachim underground. So what are we talking about? I'm a Rav from Bar Papa. Misikra tefach. It's enough if it's just buried a tefach under the ground, that would be sufficient. Okay. Adkan, let's recap our daf today. Okay, really, what ended up happening is Choshen Mishpat snuck into today's daf. Pesachim daf Lamed Aleph is really a Choshen Mishpat daf, just, you know, in the context of Chametz on Pesach. The Mishnah tells us that if Chametz is a security, so the lender is considered the owner of that Chametz. If that Chametz was held by the lender during Pesach, the lender is considered the owner of that Chametz. If that lender is a non-Jew, so that is not subject to Chametz Shavah Lava Pesach. If the lender is a Jew, that is subject to Chametz Shavah Lava Pesach. That's the Mishnah. And then the Gemara's entire discussion today, right, is, right, the 80% of today's daf is all a machlokus between Abaye and Rava. When a lender is identified security that is going to secure the loan, and there was a default of the loan, and the lender now claims his security, so does he now own it from this point going forward? Or is it retroactive to the time of the origination of the loan? Machlok is between Abaye and Rava. Abaye says retroactive, and Rava says mikanu lahaba. And from that point going forward, a question of which one sounds better in the various scenarios that we described. We described a complex scenario that comes up in the Gemara and Ksuvos that we discussed in today's daf regarding Shimon, who purchased the land from Reuven, but on credit, and Reuven dies, and now the Yesomim are making a claim to Shimon that creditors can't, you know what? The case is so complicated. But anyway, from that case, what seemed to clearly come out over there is that Rava, who advised Shimon what to do in order to get the property back, meaning give the property over to the Yesomim and then be able to collect it back, that seems to be predicated on Lema Freya, not Mekanu Laba. And what the Gemara did is the Gemara sidestepped that issue. The Gemara says that, no, not necessarily. It could very well be just simply the transitive property of loans, right? A owned B, B owned C. So over here, it's that property that allowed Shimon to, on one hand, give the property back to the Yesomim, but at the same time, able to go ahead and collect it again. Good. That was the complicated part of today's daf. Then we went through our Mishnah. Our Mishnah seems to be a nod towards the Baye. The Gemara sidestepped that issue as well. Our Mishnah, the chametz wasn't just simply identified as a security; it was actually being held by the by the lender, and even there, Rava would say that that's lemafreya. The Gemara cited a number of other Mishnayos and Braisos, and the Gemara again deflected, defended. We ended up with a machlokes between Abai and Rava in terms of its security, whether it is mikana laba, that's Rava, or lemafreya, that would be shitas Abaye. But through today, it came out not to be that simple, because today's daf, we made distinctions whether the lender's holding the security versus the lender not holding the security. We also made a separate distinction in terms of the borrower saying to the lender, I'm giving the security me'achshav. That also becomes significant as well. And then the last thing that we covered today was what happens when rubble falls on top of your chametz. How deep does it have to be under the rubble to be for you to be excused from having to go and dig it out in order to destroy it? Meaning, at what point in time is it considered destroyed? So the Tanakhama says, as long as it's under, it's considered destroyed. Rav Shimon Gamliel qualifies and says, so that the dog doesn't dig it up. The Gemara explains that's three tefachim deep. Is that the same halachas as a shomer? The Gemara says, not necessarily. For a shomer to watch somebody's money, it just has to be out of sight. One tefach under the ground. But vis-a-vis chametz, where we're looking at dog sniffing, chametz sniffing dogs, so there it has to be buried even more, three tefachim under the ground.